You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornerHost.com. Joining me on the other line is my other co-host, Tony East. Tony, we were wrong. They went 3-1, not 2-2 in the week. Disappointing week.
Whoa, 1-3.
One and three. My bad. 1-3. Disappointing week or okay week? What's kind of your feelings after this?
I'm grappling with it. The Rockets just have the right personnel to smoke this team, but I thought they were going to beat them at home. It's hard to say disappointing when they lose to the MVP and the probably leader in the clubhouse for MVP this year in Joel Embiid right now. But at the same time, it just feels wrong. So I'll go with half disappointing, half not disappointing.
Yeah, I lean toward disappointing only because it felt like outside of Oladipo, everybody else was kind of eh.
And they had three home games.
Yeah, and when you have three home games, you got to win. They only had two home games. Only two.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, only two home games. I'm down. Thank you. Yes, they only had two home games. So I don't know. I thought it would go differently, but
it felt like they should have got one from the Rockets. It just did. It felt like Sunday's game, they just couldn't quite get over that like hump to get to where they needed to be in the second half. And it really, outside of that second quarter, they pretty much had a good game as the Rockets. It was just they had an awful, awful second quarter.
And then the Philly game, the horrible first quarter, and Philly's also a matchup disaster for this team. And with Embiid playing as good as he is, like a lot of it last year was they actually had success against Embiid. This year they probably won't as easily. So
I will say without Covington and Saric, it might actually be a better matchup.
Whoever their new starter is, especially if Kojo did amazing on Redick. That was an underrated storyline.
Yeah, I mean, assuming their starting five is Fultz, Redick, Butler, Simmons, and Embiid, and they're not as deep. I mean, because Covington seems to kill him a lot. He just ends up wide open because they end up over committing to Embiid. And you know what? Butler, I don't know what the shooting percentage is, but I guarantee Butler's a worse 3-point shooter than Covington.
He is. Yeah, so, by like 9% or so.
Yeah, so maybe this works out. I don't know. I mean, we can come about Philly all day if we want to. We shouldn't do that, but it's interesting. It might actually be better for them for at least the short term. I don't know. Once they figure it out, maybe not defensively, they might kill them, but just for the short term.
Yeah, they'll have growing pains. I think they play again later this month, early next month, so be a good time for it. But I'm not disappointed about either of the Houston games. Really, they're super good. So I guess I don't lean more towards disappointment, but I don't really lean either direction.
Yeah, I think it was also kind of a hard week. I mean, this is a stretch where they played Boston, Houston, and Philly in like 5 days. And Miami is always tough, though.
Their schedule is brutal.
Yeah, and it eases up now a little bit. I mean, they get. Yep. Okay, Utah is not. It's pretty good. But they get like Atlanta. And they start playing the Landers. We haven't seen Atlanta or like Charlotte yet. Who's I think is pretty bad. We play Chicago, Phoenix, Sacramento. You know, they get some easier teams coming up at least.
Finally.
Yeah, it's gonna be nice to have a little ease because we were talking about this. They seem to beat all the bad teams, and you said they've lost basically a top 12 player in every team. So they aren't beating the good teams, but they're beating the bad teams, which is enough to make the playoffs, obviously.
Yeah, that's kind of their MO. Once they start sneaking a few of those better wins out, like the Boston win and the San Antonio win are the two for me that stick out. You know, they can beat good teams. They haven't put together a bunch of them yet. And Grizzlies apparently pretty good too, but
yeah, so I don't know.
If I count it's that early, way. So I don't know if I buy that yet. But they look good now.
Yeah, I think the most frustrating thing that's kind of leads into what we wanted to talk about first was that they keep getting kind of destroyed on the 3-point line when they lose games. And I mean, like Houston really was the epitome of this. Houston, I think, took 47 threes in both games, and the first one they made 15, and they made 20. That was like the difference. But it just felt like the Pacers 3-point wise were getting outplayed from that part of the game basically because they couldn't get enough threes up, whatever's the match, and they were trading threes for twos. They did that against the Bucks too. Just these good teams seem like they understand that we're going to shoot a three, you shoot a two, we'll trade you all day. And the Pacers haven't quite realized that. They don't want to realize it. They're ignoring it, whatever it is. That's what's kind of frustrating me, at least at the moment with the team.
Yeah, I told you this before we started. And it's a really tough grapple for me of like, why aren't they taking these shots? We can't, like, I don't want to sit here and say Nate McMillan's like, don't shoot threes, you know, like, I don't know the answer to that. I know he is really big on not settling for bad shots and ball movement. So, you know, maybe if they want to take more threes, what there needs to be more is just like whipping the ball around and then off ball having the actions required to make those shots happen. But at the same time, they're pretty good at getting to the rim, and they when the games they don't settle, you know, particularly I think of the San Antonio game when I think of them not settling, like they had a ton of possessions that game where the ball was moving around great. They didn't shoot that many threes that game. They made a bunch of them, but they didn't shoot a bunch of them. So I think that there's a combination, and I haven't figured out what the right balance is of good ball movement and off good movement of the ball and good off ball movement versus just like Houston chucking style.
Yeah, but the thing Houston does really well, which Indiana probably could do, and that's set up guys in the corner.
Yes. I mean, yeah, we talked about that too before. Yeah.
Thad Young could have the PJ Tucker role. I mean, he could. He has that ability, right? I mean,
yeah.
The fact that the Pacers, it's similar with their offense, it's never directed towards a corner three or some kind of efficient three-point shot. It seemed like it's either directed like we're going to set pick and roll, we'll occasionally run the Bojan play, or it's Oladipo make a play. They don't seem like – or this kind of like the scramble three where they get offensive rebound, people are – whatever it is, but they don't ever – feel like they're setting up to hit a three-point shot. It's always directed towards getting a layup, which I get that's your most efficient shot, whatever it is. But at times, like, they're just going to leave Thad open. They're going to clog the lane if you try to do that. And why not just keep hitting the Thad? Or why not, you know, you should give your Evans stat in a minute, but, like, why not Evans kick the ball to McDermott more? Like, there's just things like that they could do more because they – even though Thad is only shooting, let's say, I think 30-something percent from three, if he shoots a lot of corner threes, that actually might go up. He's not a terrible shooter.
He's making a third of his corner threes, and given that he's shooting 17% from three on the season, I will take a third.
Yeah, sorry. That's the stat I meant. You said, but right, isn't the stat if you make a third of your threes, it's worth about the same making half your twos? So
yeah, it's exactly the same.
and Thad isn't doing that great shooting twos, to be honest, either. He's shooting below 50%. Oh, actually, shooting 50.
Pretty much exactly 50.
Yeah, basically 50% from the actual field. So. I don't know.
Yeah, from inside the arc, he's shooting a little above 50, I believe.
And that's been an atrocious free throw shooter so far this year. Yeah, so I mean, the 3-point shot actually might be his most efficient shot in the corner, at least, the corner three.
No, his Duckins is most efficient shot to me.
Okay, most efficient non-action shot where he can kind of just be out of
it. Yes, yeah. Yeah, it's even if you don't seek out the Thad Young corner three, but you live with it. But meanwhile, like McDermott is only attempting a quarter of his threes from the corner. Did I say that wrong? Was that a good sentence? I got lost in the middle of that. 26. Go ahead.
I just mean he's only taking 2.7 threes per game. This is a guy who should make his living shooting only threes. Like he should be taking five.
Here's what I wrote about McDermott that blew my mind. Where is it? Gosh, 73.1 of his shots this season have been threes. Okay. So he should be taking like, that means at least five a game, but he's not even shooting a career high attempts from three because they're just not giving him the ball. But he's making 60% of his corner threes too. Like he's shooting really well. They're just not going for him. And again, I'm not saying they need to just like hunt threes the whole game because if you get too dry or like if it's too obvious what you're doing, you become like Atlanta, honestly, is just hunting out threes and they're not looking too hot on offense, you know.
Yeah, but already become Milwaukee or Houston, who are really good NBA teams. I mean, like, yes. The thing is, if they think you're hunting out threes, it forces them to stay out of the lane, then opens everything up for Oladipo, who can just
It's like the process to me, you know? Like, if it's just how they have it now, everybody's standing around and...
Well, and also, it's like the opposite thing, where if they know you're not going to hunt for threes, they can clog the lane on you.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, they need to find some kind of balance, I guess.
Right, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, but with the ball movement comes that balance, I think, like, automatically. You saw it in the Spurs game, to me. Like, that was, I think, their best game of the season, personally. At San Antonio, Ball moved around. I think they had their 350-something passes, easily their most of the year in a game, and they just looked great. The ball was moving around. They were sinking the open shots the whole time. They were getting what they wanted. It was great. And they didn't hunt mismatches, which I think has been problematic for them. So that was what I liked.
Yeah, but there's that game, and there's the five other tables of them not doing that and being screwed. I mean, occasionally they win games where they don't have the issue. Where like, I think Boston example, where Oladipo just played better than everybody at the end of the game. That's where they won. But it seems like to get over this hump of only beating bad teams, they either have to improve players or improve the system, I guess.
Or both.
or both. But I mean, like, right there, you know, the whole Tyreek thing, I mean, in my opinion, is why he's not feeding McDermott more, whether it's a coaching thing or just him, you know, maybe, you know, they're beating his head that you just go to the rim. Cause Sabonis is cleaning him up a lot of times when he goes to the rim anyways. But like Tyreek, you know, we've seen it. We saw it the first game where we had that great like, kind of wrist pass around the guy. Like, if he goes to the rim and looking for McDermott, he could find McDermott most of the time because and you know, Harden does that. Harden is really good at that, going to the rim and either, you know, find the lob for Capella or kicking out to a shooter in the corner. And I think if they just beat into Tyreek's head, that it would work a lot better. Because right now he's almost becoming a Lance Stephenson, and he's shooting maybe not as bad as Lance was shooting from three in the field, but he's not like much better. Let's put it that way.
No, his finishing at the rim has been so bad that you want him to pass more on drives, but he's like starting to turn it over more. You know, people were complaining about him turning it over more than he was passing early in the year. I didn't see it. And it keeps getting closer and closer to that being the case, which is kind of hilarious. But yeah, it's the one in the Houston game that I tweeted the picture of was so egregious that I was like mad. Like McDermott had no one within 10 feet of him, and Tyreek tried to dump it to Bojan. The ball went out of bounds. It's just frustrating. Like, that shot is the shot you should be looking for, like, if you can, every time down the floor.
Yeah, I mean, and Tyreek should have more than 2.5 assists per game. He just should. He should have 4, probably. I mean, that's the kind – I mean, if you're going to be the main distributor point guard, you know, I think part of his role might be understanding that, like, he's playing on a better team than he did last year, so he can rely on other guys more. But he just – it's something. And like we said, it's kind of early, so maybe he's still figuring out, but – some point, week after week, him not playing well, making the bench not play well, making the bench unit look bad, and which is really dragging this team down in every loss.
Yeah, he was good in the Boston game and the Spurs game that I liked so much. So they're two best wins he was good in, ironically.
Yeah, I mean, but if you're relying on him every night to do that, then it's kind of
– that's problematic. That's bad.
Your bench is kind of there to help maybe win you some nights, and then like you did, you know, San Antonio and Boston – but then kind of keep you steady the rest of the time, like not supposed to lose it for you.
No, the bench's role is to just keep it close so the starters can get the win. And he's second in usage and fourth in assist rate on the team. So not great, especially considering he's not shooting super well. So, maybe it's a shooting slump, and like when it gets going, it'll be better. But it's tough for him. And someone said this on Twitter, and maybe this is accurate. Like maybe he feels like he needs to get, quote unquote, get his points, especially in a contract year, that he stopped passing because of that. Who knows? But
yeah,
it's frustrating.
We were afraid of that before the year. The all the 1 year contracts would screw up them. I guess the thing that Tyreek needs to do better is, like you said, keep it close, because I think we both agree if the game is close to the end of the game, they have a very good shot because of Oladipo. And that's kind of into our next point, is that Oladipo really, he brings it every night. I mean, like I think we've gotten spoiled how consistent he's been this year. You know, 20 points now, won 13 straight games. Besides the first game, he had 20 points every game. Yeah, sometimes he's not playing as well offensively, but then he brings defensively. I mean, every night he brings his defensive game, his A game. He's at 7.1 rebounds per game, which is really high for a guard. His sets are off the chart. And I guess the question is, he needs some kind of number two. And the way kind of I phrased before to you when we were kind of previewing what we wanted to talk about was, you know, I get the whole Miles Turner's a bonus thing. They're just, those players are really good players if they're your third and fourth guy on the team, because they're just that notch below, you know, all-star level. Oladipo needs kind of an all-star guy to help him out. And they have these kind of glaring flaws, both of them do. I mean, it's whether it's defensively with Sabonis or offensively with Turner, they just have some flaws that are just obvious that teams kind of exploit. And so you're kind of in this gray area where you have to decide, do you want to trade one of them to actually get a legit number two, if you can do that with an expiring and a pick, or do you keep them, try to get a guy for agency, which is hard for Indiana, or can you get some guy on the cheap without having to do that? Because that's obviously the goal, right? If you can keep both Sabonis and Turner, you would do that, because they've both been really good for the team in different ways. But it's to figure out, is how do they lure that number two in? I think I talked about this yesterday podcast, and I kind of do, like, the Wizards are on the verge of blowing that team up. And Bradley Beal, if he is one of the guys on the trade market, he'd be like that perfect number two next to Oladipo.
They would never trade Bradley Beal. And I actually don't think they're going to blow it up.
Why would they be great? If they've got, let's say, $100 million committed to Wall, Beal, and Porter next year, you can't get rid of Wall. You just can't. It's contracts. Nobody's taking that $40 million contract. And there's not a single team that's legal. Take that and you're forced to trade Beal. Maybe you can convince yourself you can build around. If you get Turner, you can build some kind of team around Wall and Turner for the future. Like, why would you not trade? I guess, you know what I mean? Yeah, but maybe you convince yourself someone that Wall's your best player. Like, I just don't trade, right? I mean, Porter and Wall's contract are so high. Porter, maybe you could get rid of, but they're so high compared to their value that it's not, you can't do it. Where Beal is like properly paid. Yeah,
Blake Griffin got traded for a first. They could get traded.
Who would? I don't know. I'm not sure. Not much anybody wants to pay Wall $40 million, whatever he's gonna make. Porter, yeah, you could talk me into. You're right, Porter, because he's probably worth like 20 and not 27.
Yeah.
Whatever. He's a terrible trade kicker in there too. Like at 8%.
50%. Yeah, that's rough. yeah. You know, we talked about this yesterday. Maybe at some point, preferably for me next summer after if their free agency goes poorly, you do something like that. And obviously you need to do that at some point because that clearly looks like the biggest glaring need for the team. But we can't be talking about that after 14 games. And I think you can't skip steps in the build. You know, you have to use your space constructively before you have a sunk cost of using it already. You don't play the long-term flexibility game just to stink it all in the second season of a roster construction.
No, but the only reason you would do that is if you went to – you would use it in the trade deadline as well. I mean, I understand not today.
And the record of the trade deadline could obviously change what I just said. Like, if they're looking real good or real bad, it would change how they think about it.
Yeah, the problem is they're probably going to be somewhere in between. And that's the question is, the trade deadline is, do you trade for a guy and maybe sacrifice getting the 4 seed for, like, the 6 seed, but then you're good the next year kind of thing. Because, you know, at the end of the day, Oladipo will have one more year kind of after the season. I know as much as we think he's all Indiana and all that stuff, you never know, right? You never know how fast he can go bad. And if he's, you know, I think Paul Pierce said this on ESPN the best. He's the loneliest superstar in the NBA at this point. Like, there's just nobody there to help him. And yeah, he might like that right now, but in 2 years, he might see somewhere else where he can play with somebody that actually win a championship. And, you know, at some point, you've got to, you know, the only way the Turner contract makes sense to me is if it's because it's an asset you have to keep on a decent deal and you have to use it somewhere kind of thing. Like, I would love to keep both Turner's bonus. I really would. But I think at the end of the day, you have to flip one with some other stuff to go up a level, get like that top 35 player, I guess.
Maybe eventually, depending on how free agency goes next year. But I would not.
You don't think they're signing a free agent, do you? I mean, I think a big name one.
They wouldn't. Maybe probably not a big name one, but I don't think you keep all the flexibility to not do anything. And now they can, you know, they've seen the roster. They know what they need to build around the guys that they have. I think it'll be a better period than the summers where it was like, okay, we're stalling for next year's space anyway.
Yeah, I understand that. But like, I just don't know who they could get that can move the needle in a direction that actually.
Yeah, we'll have to see when the time comes. Because like, what did Bobby Marks' stat? Like 49% of the league is free agent next year. That's crazy.
A ton of team of cat space too. So like, crazy. It's not as valuable. Yeah, it was. It's not.
Right. Yeah. Was valuable. There could be some crazy contracts again too.
Oh, there could that could be true. I mean, I think, yeah. I mean, Tobias Harris, the one I think of, right? He wanted, what does he want? 4 years, 125, something like that.
Yeah, that'd be dumb.
Yeah, but I don't know.
That's what I'll have to find the balance. Like, does Pritch want to just bomb a bunch of money next summer to overpay a guy that would make them better, or does he just punt and then trade?
I don't know. I mean, what I could see is signing and trading for some guys using some kind of bird rights, something like that.
That could be smart. I would like that.
In terms of, I guess, of really good players who move the needle could be available, I think the best look right now is in Washington, right? I mean, that's the one team who has good players who are also level that might be trading them. I mean, there'd be somebody else, but like where you could get them on some weird deal because of they spent so much money, you take on a bad contract, whatever it is, you kind of get an odd deal done, right? I mean, I don't see anywhere else it's going to happen, to be honest.
Dallas has some guys.
But who on Dallas? Who moves the needle on Dallas?
Kind of move the needle this year if you're trading it to me. Like, you'd have to give up.
No, but you're trying to get a guy for Oladipo so he says, I want to be here. You know, we can build – these two guys can be our guys.
Well, if you're doing that, you could do it next year. Why would you do that this year?
Oh, no, I'm just talking in general this year or next year. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, well, I mean, you never know who's going to be available or what goes on, so it's hard to say. I thought you meant right now.
No, I just mean between the trade deadline and next summer, I mean, the one thing I see is Washington. I mean, I guess right now it's going to happen, but I'm not sure there's going to be them.
They're always the needle guys.
I mean, unless Anthony Davis now becomes available.
I'd throw everything in that too. Who knows?
I guess Butler could be a free agent and he might
not. I want to talk about next year. I want to talk about this year.
Well, I mean, I think we both agree that Oladipo needs a number two.
Yes, at some point he will, but I don't want to focus on next year's team or the next iteration of the team.
Why not? Because they don't. I mean, right? They're the same team they were 3 years ago, right? About what they're going to be.
No. Actually, only Turner was on this.
But they are the same team, though. Yeah, but they're just because they don't have the same amount of players. They are the same team. Superstar with a bunch of average guys surrounding him.
Yeah, it's a bunch of different dudes, and it's a different roster. They're building for something better. It's year two of a rebuild. They just traded their superstar.
Yeah, but you got to accelerate the rebuild when your superstars are free agent in the fall.
No, you don't. You got 3 more years of them.
No, you don't. You have after this year, you
have
one.
The right way is always better to me.
You have 1 more year after this year.
No, you have 2 more years after this year.
No, do you have 1 more year?
I promise you have 2 more years after this year.
I thought he had 1 more year after this year, but I could be wrong.
Nope, this is year two of a 4-year deal he signed with the Thunder.
But you still need to build around probably between then that summer and the following summer.
Yes, absolutely. It's only been 14 games. It's not fun to discuss at this point. It's not worth discussing at this point either. So much can happen. It's silly.
I think we've watched the first month of the season, and I think we know what this team is. They haven't changed in a year. I mean, they got better. Are they third in the East right now?
Yeah, they're 5-3 in the East.
Yeah, but wasn't Detroit first in the East last year at this point?
Yeah, through 20 games, usually it's about how the standings shake out every year. It's through 14. They're third.
They're tied with Philly, who just got better.
Yeah, maybe got better. Probably got better.
And Boston's below them, and Boston probably ended up ahead of them. So,
yeah, that's possible. That's certainly possible. They could also.
I'm just saying it. With this team, it seems like you've seen some improvement with some guys, but mainly it's kind of a leveling off, which is good for some guys, but on the other guys, it just sort of like reinforces the way this team has been.
I think we expected them to be leveled off, and now we're like freaking out about it. You know, like it's been 14 games. I think we have to get farther into the season, get more data, assess how the league's going before we can even
rash
moves.
About the 15-game mark is when you can make your first – real data, like look at stuff and really understand what's happening. Let's put it that way, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but in terms of, I'm looking at individual data. Like you look at Sabonis, Turner, Perry, which actually works, things like that. 15 games in is about the market where you're like, okay, enough of a sample size where this might work, this might not work. Obviously, there could be outliers, but still, it's enough of a sample size to determine that.
Yeah, there is.
And that's why you can tell certain players have leveled off, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, some players have been worse, some have been better.
Staying in the East is really sort of like vague because they're what, a game and a half above a team at the ninth spot. And last year when I made the same argument, you took the other side of it, saying, well, they're only a game between third and eighth. So you know,
I know I'm more optimistic this year than I was last year.
Hypocrisy to me last year. Just saying. Last year when I said I made an argument they were like a third in the East, you're like, well, they're also one game away.
Yeah, I know. Well, last year they weren't supposed to be good. We were waiting for the regression. This year they're supposed to be good.
See, now like we're taking opposite approaches. You really gotta.
The whole season I was more pessimistic on them. This year I find myself more optimistic, and I want to do a little rant. I just feel like I attribute that to my expectations. Like 8-6 is on pace for 47 wins. That's about where I thought I had them. So I'm like, all right, great. You know, like they're not worse than last year. They're not exceeding my expectations. It's fine. I think things are going well. But people who thought they would win 50 or like get a top 4 seed, yeah, they're disappointed. But I blame your expectations. I think that was foolish from the start.
Yeah, I mean, I'm there with you. I had the same kind of prediction. I just think there were certain players I would like to see a little more of a jump from myself.
Yes, and I can agree with that. I can agree.
That's not even just Turner because, you know, I would have loved to see – I'm trying to think of another – I mean, I'm trying to – like the regression from DC, I would have liked to see a little different from him. I mean, Thad Young kind of has – the 3-point days of Fat have kind of faded, which is kind of stuck. Like there's just certain things that we'd like to see a little more of a jump from, and we didn't really get.
If Tyreek was who everybody thought he was going to be,
I guess Tyreek's also the big one too, where it's like he really is kind of a.
He just seemed like such a solution, like in theory, and it hasn't played out yet.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right; they're 8-6, and honestly, if you take their strength of schedule into effect, they probably have an easier schedule ahead than they had the first 14 games. So they actually are probably on pace to win like 49 games.
Yeah, exactly. Right? I agree.
Because they played Houston twice, Boston, Philly. These are all good teams. Milwaukee, you know, they've played a lot of good teams already. So, yeah, they're where they are. And I guess it's whether you're okay with the way it is, which is fine if you are, because making the playoffs of years, nothing to be ashamed of. But it's where you wouldn't go to another level. We should take a quick break.
The highest iteration ceiling of this team, being patient for one more year, is crucial. And now you can go to your break.
Yeah, I'll take a quick break and we'll preview the upcoming week. All right, welcome back into Locked On Pacers podcast. The Pacers have a familiar opponent on Friday. They played this team just actually the following Friday, beat them on, it wasn't a last second shot, but a couple clutch plays by the clutchest player on the Pacers, Victor Oladipo. Tony, you got Miami's numbers up for you?
Oh, no, I don't. Ooh,
well, I do. So I'll do it. Miami is 17th in offensive rating, 13th in defensive rating. They have they're 12th in pace. And they're allowing 110 points per game.
This one can be shorter because they just played.
Yeah, I guess Dragic might play in this one.
The right? difference is Dragic. Yeah, that's
where Wade will play, right? I assume Wade will not be with his kids.
Wade's a negative at this point.
Okay, but I'm just saying that's the difference between the two games.
Yes, no, I am with you. Yeah, that first heat game was wonky with the officiating and stuff. Man, I try so hard to not whine about the refs, but they've had two bad games this year.
Oh, that was – yeah, I'm thinking the Thad throwout was really
weird. The Thad throwout was so – I don't hate Kelly Olynyk. I don't hate any NBA player, but I do not really care for Kelly Olynyk to be –
to be honest, it didn't matter because when you put Sabonis in, Sabonis played pretty well with the starters.
He did play pretty well with the starters. They had Kojo to start the second half that game, which I thought was really cool too.
They went three guard to close, right? Then they go Oladipo and Kojo with Bojan and Turner.
And it worked out because didn't they have Magruder, Winslow, Richardson, who were all kind of shorter?
Yeah, so they didn't. The only big guy they played was Whiteside and everything. Uh-huh. I think they might have played Olynyk, but like you can match him up with.
Well, they had a bio too, but not very much.
Yeah, no, I mean in the last 5 minutes.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, maybe there's a preview of what this team could be like without Thad, which is going to happen someday.
You know what's funny? I whine about – whine, that's the wrong word. I get frustrated because they have such a matchup – the Pacers have such a matchup problem with Philly, but the Heat are the opposite. I feel like they match up super well with Philly.
I'm sorry.
God, that was the worst sentence ever. They match up poorly with the Sixers. They match up well with the Heat. There it is.
This is sort of a new – revelation too, because I would say 2 years ago, I think it was, they didn't match up very well with the Heat. I mean, Whiteside used to kind of kill Turner, and I thought Turner actually got the better of Whiteside. I think he got him twice last year, and this time he did too for sure. Turner is able to move Whiteside around the court just by his presence is like kind of encouraging to like what he could be. Mm-hmm. Just you know, he's not taking 3-point shots right now, so that's odd.
Yeah, they Whiteside's still 8. I'm not gonna say like anything close to.
No, the clutch.
You didn't say this. This was not you. Turner did not really neutralize him, but I think Turner was equally impactful by being able to do what we said. And he actually did it for once. He took the guy away from the rim on one end of the floor, but Whiteside ate on the glass till he. But he was only a plus one. You know, that's what I'm talking about. Like Turner did a pretty good job with him overall. Not on the glass, though. I know someone's going to yell at me for saying
no, that. I mean, offensively, he really. I mean, the end of game play where Oladipo was took him up by three. It was Turner's kind of fear of the pick and pop that kept Whiteside a little too far off balance to give Oladipo the space during that jumper. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing he did. I mean, rebounding-wise, I mean, I think I've given up in the days of where this team
– Well, I can give the caveat because if I don't, someone's going to complain to me on Twitter, even though I don't mean it like that. Everyone's like, oh, you didn't say the rebounds.
They just get killed by rebounding by Enes Kanter, and they get killed by Whiteside. There's certain guys who kill him rebounding on the
rebound. He was good in that game, and that's a good matchup for him. Sabonis was also pretty good in that game. Another 6-for-7 performance from him. Kojo was also very good in that game. Starting the second half was the right move for him, especially as DC continues to struggle, although he was not bad in that game either. they just match up well with the Heat. The Heat have a lot of smaller dudes, which caters well to, you know, the Pacers have more front court depth. It just worked out well for them. I think you can expect a pretty similar game because I don't feel like anything was fluky outside of no Mr. Dragic.
Yeah, so let's do butchers and I can make my first point. So I'm gonna do the first butcher. I think it's gonna be Dragic, and I think that will be the reason Collison will struggle. I believe last year he killed him a couple times. Dragic is he's better than Collison, and can get by Collison's speed, and Collison keeps struggling this year. And I think that's kind of the issue. And actually, let's pull up the game right now. Philly is playing Miami right now, actually.
They are.
So he's got 13 points right now. I think he's back from his injury. He seems fine. I think he just kills Collison. And at some point, we'll do this next week. We've got to talk about Collison and whether he should still be starting on this team.
Yeah, he has not been. Well, I'm hesitant to shake up the lineup, but we'll talk again. Maybe next week if he continues to struggle.
Though he could, I mean, he's a good, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I agree. It's certainly possible.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We're getting off the point, but I'm just saying he actually wouldn't be, like. It's not like he goes to the bench and just ends up being nothing. Like he could be a good player every like with when he's playing with, against worse players.
Maybe I'm wrong here, but I feel like Dragic is taller than 6'3" when I look at him.
You know, my next to Collison. Collison's listed what 6'1", but he's not.
Collison is not 6 feet tall. That's not good.
But he's also at 6'1", right? Technically, isn't he?
He might be a 6'1" for the Pacers. You're right. That's a good choice. That is a good choice. I think he played well against the Pacers last year in most of their games too, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, the one they lost at home where they shot like 0-15 from three. He was really good.
Yeah, I remember that. If they start Ellington again, I don't think he's going to go 1-for-4. He hit some tough threes against the Pacers last year. He's a quality pick. Meanwhile, Richardson also didn't shoot well. I think either of them are good picks. I'll go with Richardson. I don't feel like he'll shoot 6-for-17 again. But he has to give so much effort on D guarding Vic that, it's tough for him.
So you're not going to pick D-Wade to butcher them?
No. I like Dwayne Wade a lot. Like, I get that Pacers fans hate Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade. I think his career was awesome.
Things he's done in the past to screw our teams over, is all.
Yes, that is understood. But he is bad now. He just is bad.
No, he's a 35-year-old NBA player.
Okay.
And
he's going to retire.
Yeah.
So he has no cares about how this team is in the future.
No, I mean, I think really honestly, they hate Olynyk more than anybody else right now at this point.
I hate Olynyk. I don't want to hate anybody. I don't want to hate Olynyk. It's very frustrating.
First of all, that Thad elbow, man.
My gosh, the flop was so egregious. I don't get how they called that a flagrant two. Like, I can retire. He didn't get ejected later either.
Yeah, I know. I thought in the broadcast sounded like they were going to throw him out. Freaking out. The end of this podcast, we should do a little Quinn segment. I think it was funny. I have a couple of things that would be funny. I love the dude, but it's funny. I guess in terms of X factors on this team, this game, do you think Thad? I mean, I kind of want to pick Thad as an X factor just because he might be pissed.
Mad.
Yeah. I don't know what mad Thad does because, like I said, he doesn't really have a go-to offensive move to like destroy you, but I don't know.
Yeah, Thad played pretty good before he got thrown out.
Did you see his wife's tweet?
Yeah, I did. Sakina's awesome.
Yeah, it was like I had in so many career getting him thrown out. Yet today he did. And like it's a picture of like I think it was some gif of her rolling her eyes or whatever, or somebody rolling their eyes. It was really funny.
Yeah, that was funny. Yeah, that was the worst, man. Like and it sucks because like, what's he supposed to do? He's just trying to move the ball the other side of his body, and Olynyk's like right in his face. Like,
yeah, and I understand you call that an attack because he like cold cocks him towards the elbow, but it's not, or even a flagrant one, but it's not a throw out.
It wasn't intentional, even. It's stupid.
No, I wasn't even looking. I was looking down the court the entire time.
No, I think it like you have to observe that and be like, that was not on purpose. Just give the Heat the ball and get it over with. Like, I get the rules are what they are, so they should get a free throw, but. In my ideal world, the rule book says that the Heat just get the ball and that's over.
Okay. In college, if you do that, even if you don't hit somebody, you get thrown out of the game.
I know. It's stupid as hell.
Which, I don't know. I mean, especially if you watch the replay, you cannot put your hands on the guy. And I don't know if Ole had his hands on him, but he was almost on top of that at that
Adam,
moment.
Let's tank for Zion Williamson. I would love to cover that dude so much.
We'll talk about the Wizards for a minute. Maybe they'll get Zion Williamson.
Oh, Zion's sick. Anyway, we're detracting from the Heat. Thad's a good pick. If James Johnson's back, that could change this game too. Do we know what his timetable is looking at? No. He's a hernia. I don't know how long those usually are.
I guarantee that's more than a week, right? A hernia's got.
Well, he's had it for the whole season. He hasn't played yet.
I don't think I have any news been practicing.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything. I doubt he plays. I really wanted to pick someone that we just crapped on in the last segment.
Oh, who?
I will pick Tyreke Evans. I'm going to do it.
Okay, do it.
Yeah, he has inconsistent good games. Magruder's a better matchup. He's fine. He was fine in this game. He wasn't like good or bad. Maybe he'll play with some heart after the tough moments from the officiating for him. If he keeps the ball movement, he's pretty good. So I think he has a good chance against his Heat bench. I tweeted that before their last game, and he was not good. I get that wrong every game. People keep calling me out on that, and they're absolutely right. Every time I think Tyreke's going to play good or the bench is going to play good, I'm wrong. But Yeah, I'll pick a good Tyreek game for this one.
Yeah, so you think the Pacers win this one?
I do. I really do.
Yeah, so do I. I think I think they're going to beat most of the mediocre to bad teams most of the time.
I'm glad the Heat game's first, because then if they win, they can. I think even a tired Pacers team could beat the Hawks.
I think even a Pacers team playing four straight nights could beat the Hawks.
They're not
very good. I think a Pacers team down all the deep could beat the Hawks.
Can we just skip to the Hawks, and can we both pick Trae Young as the butcher and get that out?
Yeah, let's just get some ratings in first. They're 29th in offensive rating. They're 23rd in defensive rating. They're second in pace, which really is something about the pace stat. We're not that important to be playing pace.
Exactly. God.
It's the balance, which I'm with
you. Why they're second in pace? Because Trae Young dribbles it up and chucks a three.
Right. I mean, last year, wasn't it like five of the top 10 teams in pace were the five worst teams?
Adam, who was first in pace this year? It's the Kings. They were first last year, too, I think.
I would have guessed the Nets. The Nets are probably fourth or fifth.
They're 25th this year. Last year, though.
Yeah. I say with pace, it's about finding the balance That's what Indiana actually did well. Sure, they still ended up where they needed their pace to be the best at defense while still being an effective offense. But anyways, that's not the point of this. The Hawks stink.
The Hawks
are a terrible team, and they want to be terrible, and they are tanking for the Zion Williams and Trae Young duo. That's the team.
Yeah, the Hawks want to up Trae Young and give him tons of reps. He's scoring 18.5 points per game, but he's shooting poorly from the field. He's actually shooting really well at the rim, surprisingly, and not well from three, which who expected that? The answer is nobody. 8.2 assists, though, which his passing from college just translated well. He's still good. And once that three comes around, he's going to be awesome. But as a rookie, he is going to be completely ineffective because he's just a terrible defender. So, the way the Hawks win this game is, they have some good shooters in Bazemore and Prince and I guess Trey if he's hot and Bembry. So, all those guys having a good shooting game at the same time, maybe the Hawks win. But, I highly doubt it.
Yeah, see, and it's not in Atlanta. I'd be more afraid in Atlanta if somehow Trae Young going off or whatever, but not in Indiana. Remember, they did lose this Hawks team last year.
They did in Atlanta last year, too. They did.
That would scare me more. But there's nothing about this team that really scares me. You know, they would former Pacer Alec Poitras on this team. I mean, that's the only thing I like about this team.
Name for them on a two-way. They actually like him there, apparently.
Hey, good for him. I'm glad for him.
Yeah, I am, too. I think he's actually an NBA player. I don't think he's necessarily you know, I'd be like a good back into the rotation guy for some team.
He's the kind of NBA player who goes on plays for bad teams. I mean, he plays minutes for bad teams. Yeah. It's kind of them. You know what I mean? Which is fine. That's what, you may live in doing that, but let's put it that way.
He's making two zeros more on his salary than mine. So.
Yeah. So you can make a living doing that for five or six seasons.
Yeah. Good for him, man. I liked him last year. He was fun. I mean, he was never good enough to be in the rotation last year, but I liked him.
Yeah, I agree. In terms of X factors, I don't know. This is probably one of the games where they score 111 and Oladipo has 18 points, loses 20 points streak, and everybody scores 15. You know what I mean?
I like Sabonis' chances of having a good game if Deadman remains out.
I like McDermott and Bojan's chance of having a good 3-point shooting game finally because they just don't guard him very well.
No, they don't. The Hawks centers are not very good, especially with Deadman out. It's Alex Len and Miles Plumlee if he's out. Good chance for a good post guy to take over that game.
Yeah. I mean, they both agree they're going to win.
This is the shortest game preview we've ever done.
Yeah, so if they win both these games, they'll have won two back-to-back games, the first two back-to-back all the games.
That would be awesome.
Speaking of players who are journeymen on the Pacers, this kind of reminded me of, and I thought, did you see the tweet? The guy tweeted at Joe Young.
Joe Young roasted him.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say, I mean, that's the worst tweet. I mean, that's mean to Joe Young. Like, what did Joe Young do to you? Like, Joe Young has not done nothing but worked hard. And yeah, he's not super talented, but he's worked his ass off, and he unfortunately wasn't able to stay with the Pacers, whatever. But he's playing really well in China. He's making $1.3 million. Like, I just thought that was complete. Just why attack Joe Young like that? Like, what is the point?
I don't know.
And Russ Smith, who isn't only in the league because Russ Smith is like 5'9". Russ Smith was 6'2", he'd be in the NBA. So I don't know. I just felt that was completely rude. And I just want to stick up for Joe Young because, I mean, he's not a Pacer anymore, but I liked him as a Pacer. I thought he worked hard. He wasn't the greatest player, but he did try. Like, he wasn't just somebody who was there to cast the checks.
Joe Young just got $1.3 million to play professional basketball. I think that's the end of the line.
Yeah, and I think we could see Joe Young back in the back end of the roster.
Yeah.
Like if he just, I don't know what he needs. I mean, he needs a lot of things, but like he could be, you know, the 12th man on our roster somewhere. Like he does work hard. He does. He's kind of like, he has funny Instagram videos, so people like him. You know, he could be on a roster easily in the NBA someday. I don't know why this guy was crapping on him because he's playing well in China.
A shame. I loved writing that. I liked researching China stats. Al Jeff playing pretty good. He had a 26 pointer the other day. Joe Young playing awesome.
Yeah, and I personally just like Joe Young, so I felt like that. I just thought that guy needed to be called basically the worst guy of the week.
Yes, I agree. We should do that.
I know.
Can't. Wait, that'd be so mean.
Yeah, it would probably be mean.
A best and worst fan of the week.
Well, I mean, I just think like just who is being like a complete A-hole on Twitter about the NBA players is sort of like I never seen the point of like crushing guy like that. Like I understand you can critique guys' game and that, but like saying he's never going to be anything, like that's just not, that's like a little too much to me. If I find, you know what I mean? There's a way to criticize a guy without being just a complete a-hole.
Yes.
And that's what that felt like.
My final thing for this episode is Caris LeVert just got taken off on a stretcher, and that's really sad because I like Caris LeVert.
Remember when, what they said, the Nets wouldn't trade Caris LeVert for Jimmy Butler, apparently.
Yeah.
They were supposed to do it because he's a
good time.
Good times. Yeah, all right. So we're doing a mail.
No, we got to. Yeah. We already have a ton of questions, so we might be squeezing them in. I didn't
tell you that. I think we should do a two-parter, two-day mailbag.
We might do a two-parter, two-day. We should. That'd be a good idea, actually.
We decided on the podcast. That's what we're doing. I was thinking that. We got.
Okay. We're going to do two straight days of mailbag. So tweet at us some questions. We already have quite a few.
Let's say we'll probably cut it off. We'll probably record it all at one time and then split it into two podcasts. So like try to get them in by tomorrow, let's say like 5.
That would be convenient for me.
Yeah, 5. You get it by 6. Maybe we can still hit them, but 5 or 6 tomorrow would be best. Obviously, we'll do more mailbags. So maybe some questions we can send for later, but getting all your questions, we're going to mail probably mailbag every month is our plan, I would say, right? Once a month?
Yeah, especially when there's big gaps like this.
Yeah, and this big 5-day gap allows us to kind of like, like I said, take a break, look at the, like, you know, this is the one week where I thought you could take a break, look at the real stats, enough games to kind of see some of the things. Like, I wanted to finally look at the Turner Sabonis pairing, and it's actually kind of working. So, do 14 games. Like, that's what I kind of want to look at. And there's enough sample size to say, okay, we kind of know where this is heading. Obviously, things can change. You could have a good month, whatever it is, but at least we have an idea. Like, the Oladipo consistency, like, yep. There's enough that he's a consistent NBA player. Now, the question will be the Oladipo, can he inch his way up to like 27 points a game? I don't know. We'll find out.
That'd be awesome.
That might be like the solution to this team playing better is him just slowly getting a little more efficient shots and stuff like that and doing it himself. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Things like that.
Yeah, that would be great. I just watched the video of Karis's injury and I couldn't speak for a second there. Don't watch it. It's disgusting. Yeah. Send in questions. We're resetting. We're learning a lot. It's great. We'll do it again every month with more mailbags. I had one more. Oh yes, convenient transition to send in questions. Tweet at us at Locked On Pacers or at Friedman Adam 5 or at T East NBA.
Yep, any of those will work. We'll take all the questions and we'll try to answer them all. And obviously, there's overlaps, whatever, but we'll shout people out and stuff like that. We appreciate everybody who sends questions and stuff like that because, you know, without you guys, we don't have a podcast.
Yes, absolutely. We had the greatest month ever in October. You guys are the best thing you've done.
Yeah, that's all we got for his Locked On Pacers podcast. Check back with us tomorrow for our mailbag. Send those in. That's all. Have a great rest of your day.